Hey everyone, welcome to our next edition of Taking Stock. We've talked a bunch in recent podcasts around the really important topic of racial injustice in the workforce and really in society as a whole. Similarly, I want to talk about the topic today of gender inequity and some of the unconscious bias that is taking place in the workforce. From a hiring perspective, just some stats to share, I was fascinated to find out that both men and women are twice as likely to hire a male candidate. Women are 79 times more likely to be hired when there are two female candidates in the finalist pool. Women are 46% more likely to be hired with blind applications or auditions. From a management perspective, half of men believe women are well represented at their company, but 90% of senior leaders are in fact men. Men are 30% more likely to obtain managerial roles. 23% of CEOs are women. Only 6% of CEOs at Fortune 500 companies are women. So I think we're all aware of these stats. I wanted to share them as somewhat of a backdrop for the discussion we'll have today. And excited to welcome Irene Burbeck to our chat. Irene is a great friend of mine. She is a partner at Clarkston. Has a lot of really interesting perspective on these topics and others that we'll hit upon today. So enjoy the discussion with Irene, and we'll talk soon. Hey, Irene. Welcome to Taking Stock.
Hi, Steve.
So is this your first podcast?
First ever. Awesome. I'm an avid listener. I've never participated in one.
Are you an avid listener of mine?
Of course.
I sense hesitation. I sense a little bit of a pause.
I think I may have been your first listener to your first episode.
Okay.
Yeah. Awesome. I was excited. And I've listened to several.
That was more about Brandon than me, I'm sure.
I defer.
Another pause. I love it. So this is going to come real naturally to us. You and I spent a lot of time chatting about random topics. And when I was thinking about, you know, different topics that I wanted to talk about, you were the first that came to mind. We've talked a lot about racial injustice over the past few, podcasts. And the topic of gender inequity and women's empowerment is something that has been bubbling up a little bit within Clarkston and within my mind. And I know you have some points of view around it. And you've taught me a lot about, different perspectives that you've shared with me. So I wanted to talk a little bit about a variety of topics, and we'll see where the conversation goes. And let me kind of take you back to, I was actually in a harassment class that we had to go through, within the firm, just training that all partners had to go through.
I think we call it preventing harassment. Not harassment.
Thank you. See, I learned from you already. Thank you very much for that clarification. So I was in a preventing harassment class, and we were doing some role-playing activities, and we were talking about, there was the role play was one where I was working with an advisee of mine, and she was on maternity leave, and I was questioning whether or not she was going to be coming back. The instructor of the class said, would you ask the same thing of a father in that situation? And I said, no, and it just never would have occurred to me. And just the bias that I have in my mind, the unconscious bias around what it means to be a working mom versus what it means to be a working dad, was really eye-opening to me. So I wanted to get your thoughts around that. Maybe I thought we could start there. I assume that's not uncommon, and it's
right.
This perception of what it means to be a working mom versus what it means to be a working dad. You know, that can't be unique, right?
No, I think that is really interesting. And I reacted to that in two ways. So first, you might not ask that to a man. I feel bad for the man in that circumstance. And like, that's my initial reaction for 2 seconds is, new fathers also need support. And there might be in their family, it might make the most sense for them to stay home. In our profession, especially, we travel a lot. And so a man who's just welcomed a new baby into the family might look at his travel circumstances different. So that, you know, that's reaction one. And then two, the thought that after a woman has a baby, that her perspective on work would change more dramatically than a man, I think is an interesting one. I have children, so I can tell you that, that having children did change my perspective on work. And I'd be happy to share you actually how that changed it. Yeah. But that might be more in a parenting podcast.
No, that's okay.
But yeah, I think that's really common. Yeah. So what changed after I had kids was really interesting. I thought, you know, all of a sudden I had these things in my life, we'll call them humans. My firstborn's name is Elijah. Mm-hmm. And Elijah became the most important thing in my life. And I also hurried back to work. And I thought, if I'm going to be away from the most important thing in my life, mm-hmm. I better be doing something I love.
Yeah.
And I love my job. So I'm really lucky. And what I found was I was always going somewhere. I would wake up in the morning and go to work. And at the end of the day, I would go to the elevator and go home. And I never felt like I was leaving either one because I had two. But I think that could be said of men or women to circle that up.
Yeah. And it's crazy. You know, here's where we are. And I was, you know, doing some reading and you look at just like the history of, you know, just legislation and civil rights and, you know, all the things that we've tried to do from an equity standpoint, there are still just these age old biases and perceptions that we have around, you know, the roles that, you know, from a gender perspective, as it relates to the workforce, the types of jobs that make sense. You know, some of the stats are ridiculous. If you look at, you know, I think 6% of CEOs of Fortune 500 companies are women. It's mind boggling. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely mind boggling. Why has it taken us so long to get to? And I share with the audience, I'm able to see you, but our listeners aren't. You have a wonderful Ruth Bader Ginsburg shirt on. Mm-hmm. And so I ask you, you know, why, but also what would she say? Like what, in terms of why we've been so slow to move as quickly as we need to move?
Yeah, I think the societal norms probably at some point made a lot of sense. You know, when our society maybe was more agrarian and working the fields was the primary job. Right. Or, you know, actually, that's the only example I can think of. And I know a lot of like really BA women that could work the fields just as well as a man. And I have farmers in my family and they did.
Yeah.
But I think that there's just been societal norms that went back as long as time. And when you have an advantage, and a lot of popular discourse talks about privilege. And when privilege is in place, it's really hard to give to others. So, you know, when we look at the progress of education, you know, men were allowed to have certain types of education and then therefore were allowed to have certain types of jobs and then therefore had certain roles in families. And we look at that cascading down as educational opportunities start to open up. I think job opportunities started to open up. But why that has taken so long? Ruth Bader Ginsburg has that great quote about, I'm going to paraphrase because I don't know it exactly, but I'm not asking for a lot just for you to take your foot off my neck. You know? I think I'm really fortunate, Steve, that I don't see a lot of foot on neck in my life, mm-hmm. but I do see a lot of subtle bias that I think could be prevented, the unconscious bias we talk about sometime. And I think that's where a lot more progress needs to be made in the white collar jobs that, you know, that we see.
Yeah. So share some examples of that. So we've talked about, when I think of a couple of places where that unconscious bias potentially manifests itself, maybe in how we hire people, you know, some of the stereotypes that we have in terms of the types of roles that, you know, different genders will play, but also how we review people, mm-hmm. And how some of those unconscious biases, you know, play into that. What are your thoughts?
I think with the stereotypes and the roles that we put people in, I definitely have seen progress there, even within the last, say, decade or two. But it still comes up. So training and change management roles are roles that we have a lot, which are educator roles and implementation, you know, helping users be ready to use systems on a more strategic initiative. We might be preparing an organization to transform. Mm-hmm. I think frequently when we see young professionals come in, we imagine women in those roles. And I think it is based on this antiquated vision of like a teacher being a woman that we do very subtly. I don't think we do it on purpose. Whereas the technical roles, I think there are people who kind of assume that they would be more men. And I can give you an example from yesterday. I was speaking to a colleague and I said, oh, I've got a drop. I'm going to interview a technical lead. And the person said, oh, I hope we hire him. And, you know, this is not an unevolved human. This is just a person whose bias just creeped out. And so I think that we have to be really cautious, like as young professionals or new professionals come in, that we don't assign them one of these, you know, subconscious bias type career development offers. And then same thing when we have professionals that come to us and say, I'm really passionate about this, that, and the other. What should I do next to not let those biases impact the way we coach and mentor? So I think that's, you know, listening through their gender to their words and their passions and then going from there. It can be, I'm sure it's challenging. It's, you know, yeah.
There's a somewhat of a tangent. There's a guy in my town, you know, the kind of guy who's a lot of traditional stereotypes of being a tough dad, you know, tough on the sidelines, you know, yelling at his kid, you know, really like, you know, stands out in the outfield, kind of a gruff guy. He's a kindergarten teacher. And it's mind blowing to us. We just don't, you want to talk about like your perception and stereotype of what, you know, he defies all of that. And I am sure he is wonderful at his job. He wouldn't be in it if he wasn't. But we definitely have in our mind what it means being a trainer, what it means to be a technical analyst, what it means, unfortunately, to be a CEO and to be a strong leader. And one of the things that I, and this is, you know, maybe kind of pushing it a little bit, but one of the things that I always get frustrated from, and this gets to the review point, where I've learned a lot from you, you could be having a conversation when you're looking at someone's performance, and some of the same characteristics that you might see in a man. He's strong. He's aggressive. He's assertive. He's demonstrative. You take those same characteristics and you're describing a woman, and it might be she's pushy, she's too aggressive, you know, she's other work, like, right? There's such a double standard. And and is that unconscious or is there something else there?
Yeah, I like to believe it's unconscious. I think what's interesting is, especially in an organization like ours, which for the listeners, we are a competency-based organization. So we have a list of what it means to be successful at each level. And the idea is that then professionals are stacked against competencies, and that provides parity. Mm-hmm. Cool. Except, you know, coaching and mentoring and giving people performance appraisals is not about checking boxes. It's about really looking at that person and giving them meaningful feedback. Mm-hmm. Well, when we do that, we often don't pull out the competency matrix, and we still need a lot of interpretation. And then what humans do, I think, is compare them against these social norms, compare them against what they were raised with, how they were brought up, what they think success looks like. Mm-hmm. And those things all come together, and that then becomes how we frame our feedback. So when we look at a woman who is insistent on a point, insistent, right? And we look at a man who is insistent on a point. We might then say to the woman, like, well, your voice just gets so shrill, right? Like it's really hard to understand you. And is that you know, where is that in the competency matrix? How do we make that feedback fair compared to the man's? But that's a huge challenge. I think as much as possible, we have to take a step back and we have to use the competency matrix and we have to question our own, we have to question our own social norms. And I'm not used to women being in charge, or I'm not used to men being in charge. Maybe that's somebody's home life, is that they have moms, right? And that that it's very uncomfortable for them to be led by men, and therefore they think a man is pushy. You know, I think we can look at whatever somebody's norms and make sure that when they're giving feedback, that's not playing too heavy-handed, you know, for or against a person. I think frequently the feedback is more to the benefit of the person that looks like the feedback giver versus, well, at least in our organization, like versus the feedback person is unfamiliar with that type of person and therefore they are graded down. I think what I'm more used to is like, we had a great new hire who really was great. They came to work with me and, and I'll describe him a little bit for the purposes of this, you know, polished, mid stature, white professional, man, medium level technical competence. And everybody who met him at the first company meeting just thought, wow, that guy is going places. They spoke to him for 2 minutes and this man may be going places.
Right.
But I have never gotten such glowing feedback about somebody on the hiring team. And I think it was because, you know, he favors Brad Pitt, not because, not because he's super intelligent, or which he is actually. So I think that's like, it was a beauty bias and of that versus, you know, when
I just don't think you should be talking about me like this.
Okay.
But anyway, go on.
Yeah. So yeah, I think it is unconscious. I think that people compare to, you know, what they're used to. And I think we have a bunch of, and Brandon on your first podcast, cheap plug for that podcast, talked a lot about that unconscious bias. And I think that applies in all cases, including gender.
So there are, so I'm going to make a statement, which we could debate whether it's right or wrong, but then, you know, the kind of follow-on question. So there are traits that might be gender specific. At least there's a perception that there are traits. There is a perception that perhaps women might be more consensus driven. They might be more empathetic. They might like to, you know, drive, you know, group alignments in making decisions. There's a perception that men might be firmer and stronger and more heavy handed. Again, those are perceptions, and I would argue that they're not true. However, I've heard some commentary from some women that I truly respect that have made strides to not be their true selves, that not being true to who they are and to try to be something that they feel could allow them to be more successful. So if they are more consensus driven and they are naturally going to take a back seat and want to hear other people's opinions prior to sharing their own, they are consciously inserting themselves earlier in the discussion, trying to be more authoritative because they feel that that's going to help them be successful. I don't know if I agree with that. I think you should be true to yourself at all times, whatever that might be, as opposed to trying to live up to or try to be something that, you know, that you're not. What do you think?
That one's fascinating.
Lots to react to.
Okay. Lots to react to. The hairs on my arm stood up, and here's why.
Yeah.
Because it's my strong belief that the problem with society, I'm going to go big here, society, the problem.
You weren't an RBG shirt, just go with it.
I'm doing it. Is that we get negative reaction when we are not consistent, not with ourselves, right? Which I agree we should be, but that's a separate point. We get negative reaction when we are not consistent with the norms that are expected of our gender. So what I worry about is how a so let's say that I do think that women are generally thought to be soft, nurturing, consensus driven, emotive, all the things that you said. I think that women get a negative reaction when they behave not like those things.
Right.
And so, so I think it's really interesting that there are women that are like, that is me naturally. I naturally fit the mold and I have to not fit the mold. But I understand why they're doing that, because that's layers of perception. So a man is, let's say the antithesis is that a man is driven and decisive and self-oriented and success-oriented or whatever these things are, right? And so a woman might naturally be consensus driven, and then she tries to be these things that the man are.
Exactly.
I think that's a trap, because she will be punished for not being like the social norms, right? What we need to do is we need to say that success looks like both of those things. We need to say that success looks like consensus and decisiveness. We need to say that boardrooms should have all of these features, and that a human should enter that room, he, she, or they, right, should enter that room being them, their best selves. And that whole, let's bring our whole selves to work, that only happens when we think success looks like all those things, when we think leaders look like all those things, I think. Yeah, see? That's what we
love it. No, I love it. And we had a discussion, you know, last week, and there were some differing points of view around that. Again, I wholeheartedly believe you need to be true to yourself. And I have that conversation with people that I work with, you know, outside of kind of gender stereotypes. Be true to yourself. That's how you are going to realize, you know, your unique, you know, capabilities and your unique differentiation. Once you start trying to be something you're not, you get into really, really dangerous territory. And unfortunately, I believe, because these are, you know, a lot of people that I respect, there is a conscious effort they are making to step outside of what is natural to them. For a variety of reasons. And I just think it's a real slippery slope.
Yeah. I think, so Sheryl Sandberg, who wrote Lean In, one of the key points in her book supports both perspectives. So she says, we need to understand what the current definitions are of success and play to those. And then once we become a leader, change those definitions. And I believe that. So I'm, for people that don't know what I look like I'm 6 foot tall and I have a big personality and a bigger mouth. And, you know, so I'm a big person. And then, you know, I have big ideas, and, I never really thought I was that smart growing up. So I always try to speak first and be scrappy. And so, you know, I'm like overeager and a big participator and stuff. And that is a lot. And as I've gotten into leadership roles, I understand that I'm sometimes interpreted by sound bites. And so I need to say less. I also need to give space for people who don't speak as quickly, who maybe have to code switch as part of participating in the professional workplace. So I've had to do that, and that's against who I am. Like, that is actually out of my comfort zone, right?
Yeah.
But that's okay. That is becoming a better version of myself. That is authentic to me, to try to make space for others. That is what success looks like right now. I hope one day I can create an environment where less people have to code switch, where more 6 foot tall people who don't think they're that smart don't feel like they have to be so eager, right? So I hope to create a definition of success for my kids and your kids that looks different. But until then, I need to adopt some different practices. So I guess I support both perspectives.
And in terms of my kids and big, all they know of you is you send big, awesome presents. So still to this day, my 14-year-old Kyle, the greatest gift he's ever gotten was a whole lot of bacon that you sent to him. So not only, yes, you're also big in terms of your generosity and the gifts that you give. So that goes a long way. Irene, thank you very, very much for this discussion. I always learn a ton when we chat, and I think we could talk for the next few hours. So I hope you come back and we could chat about these topics a lot more.
Indeed. Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for coming.
Talk to you later. Bye.
So thank you all for listening. And thanks, Irene, for a great discussion. I love these topics because I think that we've got so much to learn. We're making small strides. I think just having open and honest and vulnerable conversations around these topics, we all have a lot to learn. And without these types of discussions, I think we're going to be stuck in the traditional ways of working and thinking, and some of our unconscious bias is going to remain. And we need to get better. We absolutely need to get better. You know, some of the stats that I shared earlier are embarrassing, and we could all benefit from having a more open mind and a more more vulnerability and more understanding of the privileges that different people have and the improvements that we need to make within the workforce. So thanks, Irene, for sharing some of your perspective, and looking forward to continuing these types of discussions and others on Taking Stock. We'll talk soon. Have a great day.